system and look at how we installed it and why we put it where we put it. Basically, we kind of just break down the types of systems. The soil storage system falls in the simple type of system. It distributes the rainwater immediately and just allows it to infiltrate into the soil. As far as the components that make up this type of system, it's your basic rainwater harvesting setup. The only change you have is in your storage. The three most common methods are your gravel trench, allowing the void space there for the water to sit and then infiltrate into the soil. Chamber type system, which our case study is about, that you'll see the pictures of. And then polystyrene peanuts, which are basically look like packing peanuts that allow the void space for the water to sit until it can infiltrate into the soil or be used for uptake for plants you have in the area. Here's just an overall schematic of the system. You have your catchment, your gutter and downspout to direct the water, a small catch basin that we're using to try to settle out any heavy solids, whether it be any type of roof material. Hopefully any floating material or debris will float up, and then it flows into your storage area or your whatever media you have to store the water. And then at the end, you have an observation port so you can just kind of monitor what's going on, see what the water level is, see what's happening. As far as the reasons, many of you know why to harvest rainwater. First off, it's a valuable resource that we need to be good stewards of. And if we can contain it on our land and put it to a valuable use, we need to do that. Secondly, looking at it from a stormwater perspective, which we kind of did in this situation, with increased urbanization, you all know that it increases the runoff frequency and the runoff volume. In a second here, I'll show a slide with a small graph that shows how the pre and post development of a site of land greatly affects the amount of water that runs off and the time in which it does so. And then we move into thermal shock of that water. In a largely urbanized area, you have, I know in Texas we have many 100 degree days, and then you have a nice summer thunderstorm come in. So you have the hot pavement, the cool rain falls on that pavement and the other impervious surfaces, collects that heat and pulls some of that heat out, and then that water runs into our streams and rivers. And that can greatly change the ecology and the systems that we have in those areas. And so that's not necessarily a positive thing. And then we go to the runoff quality. Water is a very good transport mechanism for many things, whether we want it to or not. And then groundwater recharge is a great thing with the soil storage and infiltration system. This slide here should have picture here, along with another picture that shows here the natural ground cover. It kind of breaks up the percentages of where the rainfall goes to evapotranspiration, 10% runoff, and then 25% deep infiltration and shallow infiltration. If you could see the other slide here, I believe it showed that you'd get about 30 to 50% runoff in an urbanized setting, only about 10% deep infiltration, and about 10% shallow infiltration, and the rest would go to evapotranspiration. And here's the graph I was talking about just a while ago. You can see here's the discharge rate of the stormwater, and here's time on this axis. And the area under each of these curves is the volume of runoff. And so you can see here, in a post-development state, your time to peak runoff is a lot shorter than if you have pre-development, say 100 years before an urbanized type setting was created. And you can see this is what creates a lot of our stormwater problems, like was talked about yesterday in Los Angeles, where they get half an inch of rain and it creates massive floods in a certain area. And so with the soil storage and infiltration system, you can take that water, put it back into the ground, and try to mimic the water process as it was before development occurred. As far as the water quality impairments that the stormwater can carry with it, it can introduce several pollutants into the water bodies. And that can be done by construction activities, pesticides, fertilizers, spills or leaks, drips from cars. And this all affects our human health and affects our quality of life. Whenever you can't swim on a beach or a lake, that hits home pretty closely when you look to the public. And as far as the pesticides and fertilizers, That's a big problem I know in a lot of urban areas and even in rural areas where farmers and ranchers are using the chemicals. And something that that I've seen in a lot of studies and a lot of comments by people that know a lot more than I do, a lot of the pesticides and fertilizer problems that we're having getting into our water is not necessarily coming from our rural areas, or at least the concentrations are a lot less in the rural areas. In the city, there's a lot of homeowners that they want their grass to be greener and healthier than their neighbor. And so when they go to buy fertilizer or chemicals for their land or for their little lot, you know, they don't necessarily read the label on the back of the bag. They think, oh, well, I think I need about 2.5 bags, but I'll get 4 and put a little extra on there. And that's not necessarily a positive thing. They put excess fertilizer and chemicals onto their land, and then we get a storm event. And that fertilizer does not have the time to become incorporated into the soil and have uptake by the plants. And so then that runs off into the streams and rivers. Here's a picture of why we kind of put this our soil storage and infiltration system where we did. You can see here, this is at the Menard City Library in Texas. The downspout comes off the building. Here you have an area where they built up the soil to build the library to get it out of the up to the right level for the floodplain. The San Saba River is, I guess, about maybe a half a mile away from here. And here you can see that it's a brand new constructed building. You have all the runoff coming from that downspout, carrying the sediment and soil away, covering the sidewalk, and making the parking area pretty muddy and inaccessible there. And so also you want to notice that this entire area here is covered by a sidewalk. And so we're kind of limited on how we can put our piping in. We can trench underneath, but it wasn't really feasible in this situation. On the backside, we're catching the water into a rain garden. And then on this other, on the right half of the building, all that water is being directed into a cistern and used to irrigate plants. And so we're stuck with this one last downspout to deal with the water there. And as you can see, with that carrying that away, that can also carry not only sediments and material like that, it can carry with it nutrients. And if you're not familiar with eutrophication is just a process that in a water body, when you have excess nutrients come into the water body, those excess nutrients are a great source of food to help algae and other plant material grow. And then when that food source is not necessarily available, then that material dies back. And in the dying process, or decaying process, that takes oxygen. And so where does it get that oxygen? The oxygen is pulled from the water, and so that then depletes the oxygen in the water. And so then you have events that lead to fish kills and other problems associated with that. As far as determining whether you need to or you can put a soil storage and infiltration system into your site, you have to determine whether it's feasible or not. And one good thing is it does utilize your current gutters and downspouts. The materials you need are going to be pretty minimal. You're going to need a catch basin, PVC piping, or another way to convey the water to where you want it to be. And then you need some type of storage chambers. And even yesterday we talked about, or we heard about a number of situations where they did this on a very large scale. They had different containers they would put in the ground and wrap in the liner and use that to infiltrate into the soil. And typically, they're gravity-fed systems, and so no electricity or pumps are needed. As far as continuing to look at whether it's not feasible for you, you have to look at your existing landscape, the excavation costs that it might incur, the slope of the land around you, and then the limited space that you might have. As far as determining where to put the system, you need to take into consideration a number of different things, including the geography, the topography, vegetative cover, separation distances. And when I talk about separation distances, we don't really have any guidance on this, at least in the state of Texas, as to where these systems can be located relative to drinking wells or property lines or in streams, creeks, and rivers. And so we have a guidance that we've kind of put into the paper that we presented for that. And then you have to look at your site water movement characteristics, not only above ground, but also below ground, how the water moves. And then your soil characteristics, which affects all of those. As far as the geography, you have to look at your climate, whether it's a warm climate you're in or a cold climate. With the storage system, you have an open passageway for cold air to get into your soil, and that could freeze the soil in a greater area than what you would like and affect the vegetation you have over the system. And then you have to look at your rainfall patterns, the size and frequency of events to determine the size of the system. As far as the topography again, since the systems are typically gravity fed, you're going to want the system to be on a downslope away from the house or a structure that you're using it on. And then the overall slope where you put the system should be away from the structure, because the underground water movement a lot of times mimics the above ground topography. And so if you have your soil sloping toward your house and you put the system in the ground, then you could have a potential water buildup along your foundation. And in a lot of areas across the country, we have clayey soils. And with these soils, when they become wet or dry, you have a high shrink and swell rate, which can put a lot of stress that's unneeded on your foundations. As far as the vegetative cover over the systems, you want to have the area vegetated to keep keep the soil there and in place. But you don't necessarily want to plant a lot of woody plants or trees directly over the system, because they could potentially plug up and the orifices that let the water go out into the soil. And as far as the separation distances that I was talking about earlier, we kind of lean toward the safer side to take a conservative estimate on that. And we kind of recommend the on-site sewage separation distances that are presented in the Texas Administrative Code to where they can be located. And this will just prevent possible water contamination issues, because like we've been talking about earlier, the water that comes off our catchment areas are not perfectly clean just yet. And so we just utilize those as a conservative measure. And again, it protects the structural integrity of your buildings. In addition to that, you want to look at your overall soil profile when you're looking at where to place your system. If you have 36 inches of good topsoil and then you have a hard rock layer, that's going to be an impermeable layer that's going to greatly affect your system. And so you really want to know what's going on in that profile to know where to place your system. You also want to look, in addition to impermeable layers, for seasonal groundwater indicators. If for half the year your system is under the seasonal groundwater table, it's not going to be very effective, and so you're going to want to place that in a different area or choose another type of system. As far as that goes, you also want to look at the type of soil you have, whether it's a clay, a silt, or a sand. And the difference in those is the soil particle diameters, and that affects the flow rate of the water through the system and determines how much water you can put into the ground over what area you choose. As far as how you can go about that, here in the States, you can look at the Natural Resource Conservation Soil Service soil reports, and that will give you an idea of what type of soils, what your soil profile is in your area where you want to put the system. And then, if you have an advanced knowledge of soils, there are techniques that you can use to do a texture by fill, where you get a small amount of soil in your hand, you wet it a little bit, and then run through a flow chart and fill the soil to determine what type you have. And again, here's the soil texture triangle, where you have your percent sand here on the bottom, your clay and your silt. And this is to kind of show that if you have a type of soil that is just on the verge of not being suitable for this type of system, it is a possibility to add amendments to the soil to bring it up to a quality where you can do that. As far as the determining your soil profile, if you can't get a hold of the soil survey report, you can always dig an observation hole. You want to try to go at least 2 feet below where your bottom of your excavation is going to be, and just see what's there and look for seasonal groundwater markers or impermeable layers. As far as what also to take into consideration for when designing your system, it's going to be your roof washer, your catch basin, the required storage volume that you want or need, your trench construction, and then your observation point. The poor man's roof washer is basically just a PVC standpipe that many systems have. It just collects that first flush of rainwater and then allows it to flow off and not into your system. And then also there's a commercially available systems that contain baffles and removal filters that can be used. As far as the catch basin, again, just to collect any additional debris that it can. As far as the required storage volume and amount of system you need to put in the ground. There's a table in the paper in your booklet that you received stating the different amount of rainfalls based on the catchment areas that you have to what length of system you need. And again, I'm going to kind of run through these couple slides real quick, just showing the basic calculations you can do yourself to how much water you can get to what length of system you need. And it's just showing that you kind of take the amount of volume that you have in your storage type system and divide it by your length of storage, and you get that per downspout. Here's a quick schematic of just two of the different designs on how they should be constructed. You can see here that here's the chamber type system that we're going to see in some pictures. It simply has a 6-inch gravel layer on the bottom to prevent scouring when the water comes in there quickly. And then you backfill with gravel, put a geotextile fabric over the top to keep any extra soil from going into the gravel and plugging those pore spaces, and then you backfill with soil. As far as the trench layout, you want to make the bottom as even as possible just so the water spreads out evenly and has the opportunity to infiltrate. The observation port, it can be as simple as a 4-inch PVC pipe that's stuck in the ground. You can use a hacksaw to cut little notches in it. So whatever the water level is in your storage area, you'll be able to see that mimicked in your observation port. You can pull this removable cap off and just see what the water level is, see how long the water's staying in there, see if it's infiltrating at all. Here's just a few construction pictures. You can see here we're leveling our site with a laser level. We're putting in our 6-inch gravel bed here. Here's the chambers that we put in. They're half circles and hollow on the bottom, and they also have holes on the sides that let the water out of the system. Here we put 5 different chambers together, and I'm trying to remember the exact volume. I think each chamber is about 52 cubic feet of storage volume, and that doesn't include all the storage volume we have in the rock itself. And here we're backfilling with the gravel. And then we put our geotextile fabric on top, and then we're placing our soil. And then we had the opportunity to carry quite a few rocks from a neighboring ranch and kind of do some landscaping. And here you can see the downspout, the catch basin here, and then we just went over to the closest chamber to the top of it, cut a hole in it that was pre-set there, and the water drops in from there. Here is the end of one of our chambers. We put an overflow pipe that flows from the top of the chamber down to the bottom. When it fills up, or if it fills up, this the center here will pop up and the water will flow over the sidewalk like it did before. But as to date, I don't believe that it has filled up yet, and they've had quite a bit of rain this past year. And here is it currently. You can see our overflow here. We do have an observation port in here, but it's kind of been covered up, and we kind of forgot that we put it there, and so we haven't really checked that yet. And here's just an overall picture of the system now, so you can see that there's no longer any stormwater problems there. All the soil is staying in place. That water's going into the ground. It's being used by all the plants that are around the area, and it looks very aesthetically pleasing, and you don't even know the system's there hardly. And as far as the operation and maintenance of the system, it's key to the long-term success of it. The cleaner you put the water in the ground, the longer your system's going to be operable. As far as that goes, you have your roof washer. You have to remove that debris. Your catch basin, your grate should be removable so you can clean it. And then in cold climates, you may need to cover your system and prevent the water from entering it if you expect to freeze right after that, because it could freeze the ground. Again, the observation port is just able to let you know what's going on under the ground. And as far as construction considerations, try to do it when it's not wet so you don't pack the ground, keep the ground fluffy, allow the water to infiltrate easier. You don't necessarily want vehicular traffic over the system. It'll again compact the soil and decrease the infiltration of the system, and you don't want any structures over the system. And this is based on this publication, and if you have any questions, I think that's coming up next. Is that right?